What a wonderful day. Hasn't it just been, I mean, just one of those glorious spring days. This hour of the Molloy program is being brought to you by a new book titled Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. The Secrets They Won't Tell You About Your Digital Life. It's written by Jason Ben Levy, a regular listener to the Molloy Show. Now here's the skinny. Too Much Magic tells the inside story of venture capitalists, media moguls, and marketeers using digital magic to distract us, invade our privacy, corrupt democracy, distort human values, and sell us things that we don't need. Awarded 5 stars from the San Francisco Book Review, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, is available on Amazon or from your local bookstore. Now, you can find out more about this by visiting the website TooMuchMagic.com. TooMuchMagic.com. And you'll find out as much as you want to know about this book. But you can fight the new digital 1% sons of bitches. That's TooMuchMagic.com. Get it. Read it. Okay? Thanks, Jason. Check it out now. Come on. TooMuchMagic.com. Thanks, Jason, for the sponsorship. I wish you just oceans of success with the book. Part of the just wondrous or wonderful, what should be the proper word, Kathy? Wondrous or wonderful news today? I guess it would be wondrous. Wonderful, I guess, literally means full of wonder. Wondrous news today. The European auction house that was going to have an online auction of a vial containing dried blood residue from St. Reagan canceled the event after complaints from the Reagan family and the Reagan Foundation. So the seller had withdrawn the item, which was linked to the 1981 assassination attempt on Reagan. And the seller instead plans to donate it to the former president's foundation. I mean, that whole story creeped me out. I mean, just totally creeped me out. We have deep in the basement below the Vatican one of Christ's toenails. You know, those stories just, I mean, they just really, I don't know, I guess they scare me. They scare me. So anyway, the item being donated is a 5-inch glass vial, 1/2 inch in diameter, and has a green rubber stopper, if you're keeping track of all this. The auction house said it clearly contains traces of dried blood, yada, 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 yada. Once the bidding on the item had reached more than $30,000 when the sale was suspended. You know, I worked for a guy one time who was a real sick son of a bitch. I mean, just totally. I mean, he made capitalism look like, you know what I'm talking about, Kathy. He made capitalism look like a blood sport. I mean, which it is, but I mean, this guy was just an absolute killer in the business that he ran. And he had a little plaque on his desk that I always thought just so identified him. And the plaque said, if you can't buy it, it doesn't exist. Remember him? If you can't buy it, it doesn't exist. Boy, those darn old Iranians. Today, the Iranian Navy saved an American-flagged cargo ship that was being attacked on all sides by pirates in the Gulf of Oman. Did you hear about this? Wasn't on the news. Nobody talked about it on the news. The news. Oh, please, Malloy. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, an Iranian warship responded to a distress signal from the U.S.-flagged Maersk, Texas. The cargo ship, bigger than a football field, almost as big as two football fields, and 14,000 tons, which at the time of their distress signal was being besieged by, quote, several pirate boats, end quote. Anyway, the vessel was saved by the Navy of the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's according to the official IRNA news agency. This is the first time that the Iranian Navy protected a U.S. ship from pirates. Our Navy has protected theirs a couple times, haven't we? Or was it pirates or what? The latest incident where we helped them was in January when a U.S. warship secured the release of 13 Iranian fishermen who had been held captive by pirates for 45 days. I read something very interesting today. You know, the United States has, we don't go from war to war. You know, all this talk about, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, now Pakistan. How about these Pakistanis, huh? How about these sons of bitches? That's the hot spot. That's where everything is going to explode. Did you know that Pakistan is producing at a furious rate nuclear weapons, faster and more, on a relative basis than any other country on earth? Did you know that? I didn't either. We have been at war for the past 100 years. We don't go from war to war. It's just that our government, our media, they don't really tell us about all the wars. And the reason this came up with me is because of what we're doing now in Honduras. Honduras! Jesus God, Honduras. But, send me an email. Tell me a 5-year period. No, tell me a 3-year period in the past century where, now this is going to be difficult because I was going to say where we have not been at war. By that I mean troops, bombs, bullets, military action in someplace on earth. You can go back. Matter of fact, you can take 112 years and go back to Spanish-American War. Go back to 1898. Start there. And tell me a period of time that is at least 3 years during which we were not in a shooting war with somebody. Now, the reason I bring this up is about the military budget again. Some information out there, I think at The Nation. I'll dig through the pile here and find it in a minute. But the real military budget of the United States is around $1 trillion a year. $1 trillion a year. You know, $1,000 billion a year. A trillion. And, of course, we don't know that, or we're not supposed to know that. You can find out if you dig around and start adding things up. And that's only the stuff where there is a footprint. There are also expenditures that are disguised as being something other than in support of the war machine. But, you know, when you really take a look at things, the most aggressive, violent nature or a violent nation of the past century has been us. Not the standard boogerman, not the Chai Coms, not the Imperial Japanese, not the Nazis, not the Italians, not the British. Us. Did you know that? We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. You know, if there's a word tonight on the program, it's war! We'll be right back.
Funny, skies are sunny, bees make honey, bees money, more. time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
Okay, I'm going to do this. You can hang around and hear this if you want to, but if you get tired of it, okay. Let's start with when the United States Army massacred 300 Lakota indigenous people in 1890. And since then, we have intervened around the world over 225 times. And according to a study undertaken by Zoltan Grossman, the United States has sent troops into the following countries over the span of the last century. So we started in Argentina in 1890. We sent troops to Buenos Aires to protect U.S. business interests. Chile in 1891. Marines sent to Chile to clash with nationalist rebels. Haiti, 1891. American troops suppressed a revolt by black workers on United States-claimed Navassa Island. Hawaii in 1893. The Navy was sent to Hawaii to overthrow the independent kingdom. And Hawaii was then annexed to the United States. Nicaragua, 1894. Troops occupied Bluefields, a city on the Caribbean Sea, for a month. China. In 1894 and 1895, the Navy, Army, and Marines landed during the Sino-Japanese War. And in 1894 to 1896, troops were sent to Seoul, Korea, during that same war. Panama, 1895. Army, Navy, and Marines landed in the port city of Corinto. China again. Troops occupied China, 1894 to 1900, during the Boxer Rebellion. Philippines, from 1898 to 1910. This is the slaughter that Mark Twain wrote so much about. Navy and Army troops landed after the Philippines fell during the Spanish-American War. 600,000 Filipinos were slaughtered. Cuba, 1898 to 1902. Troops seized Cuba in the Spanish-American War. And, of course, we still have troops at Guantanamo. Puerto Rico, from 1898 to the present, again, troops seized that country in the Spanish-American War, and we still occupy Puerto Rico. We've kind of annexed that. Nicaragua again, 1898. Marines landed at the port of San Juan del Sur. Samoa, 1899. U.S. troops landed as a result of the battle for succession to the throne. Panama again, 1901 to 1914. Navy, our Navy, supported the revolution. When Panama claimed independence from Colombia, American troops have occupied the canal zone since 1901 when construction for the canal began. So we've been there for a century, more so. Honduras, first time, 1903. Marines landed to intervene during a revolution. Guess whose side we were on? Dominican Republic again, 1903 to 1904. Troops landed to protect American business interests during a revolution. Korea, again, 1904 to 1905, Marines landed during the Russo-Japanese War. Cuba, 1906 to 1909, troops landed during an election. Nicaragua, again, 1907, troops landed and a protectorate was set up by us over them. Guess why? Honduras, in 1907, Marines landed during Honduras' war with Nicaragua. Panama, 1908, Marines sent in during Panama's election. We show up a lot during elections. Nicaragua, 1910, Marines landed for a second time in Bluefields in Corinto. Honduras, 1911, troops sent in to protect American business interests during Honduras' civil war. Guess who started it? China, from 1911 to 1941, Navy, and troops sent to China during continuous flare-ups. Cuba, again, 1912. U.S. troops sent in to protect American business interests in Havana. Panama, again, 1912. Marines land during Panama's election. Oh, I say it's election again. Honduras, 1912. Troops sent in to protect American interests. Nicaragua, hey, Mexico, 1913. Dominican Republic, 1914. Mexico, 1914 to 1918. Haiti, again. Troops occupied Haiti after a revolution for 20 years, from 1914 to 1934. Dominican Republic, Cuba, from 1917 to 1933, again. And then, of course, World War I, 1917 to 1918. Russia. We sent troops to Eastern Russia after the Bolshevik Revolution. The U.S. Army made 5 landings in that country, 1918 to 1922. Honduras again, Guatemala. Troops occupied Guatemala in 1920 for 2 weeks during a union strike. Guess whose side we were on. Turkey, 1922. Our troops fought against the nationalists in Smyrna. China, again, 1922 to 1927. Navy and Army troops deployed during a nationalist revolt. Honduras again in 1924, Panama 25, China again, El Salvador in 1932, and then World War II from 1941 to 1945. Stick around, there's a little more. Sponsored by a new book called Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, The Secrets They Won't Tell You About Your Digital Life. It's written by Jason Ben-Levy, who is a regular listener to The Molloy Show. Now, this book tells the inside story of venture capitalists, media moguls, and marketeers who use digital magic to distract us, invade our privacy, corrupt democracy, distort human values, and tell us things that we don't, sell us things we don't need. Okay, I'll add, tell us things we don't need also. Awarded 5 stars, this book, from the San Francisco Book Review. Too Much Magic is available on Amazon or from your local bookstore. Now, if you want to find out more about this, and I hope you do, visit the website, TooMuchMagic.com. Spell it out, TooMuchMagic.com. And fight the new digital 1% sons of bitches, right? That's TooMuchMagic.com. Get it, read it. Thanks, Jason. Okay, wars, endless war in the United States. The American public is, we really are naive about our involvement in war. I'm not, and perhaps you are not either, gentle listener, but you and I are different from the bobbleheads. We tend to look at war, most of us, as a temporary state of political reality, if that's the right term. War is temporary. Wars start, wars are fought, wars end. Not so. If you ask most people how many wars we've been involved in the last 100 years, you may get a few who would say 10. Most would say 5, or perhaps even 3. Where are we? 1941, 1945, when our military fought in World War II. 1946, Yugoslavia. The Navy was deployed off the coast of Yugoslavia in response to the downing of an American plane. Uruguay, 1947. We deployed bombers there as a show of military force. They were thinking about going their own way from U.S. capitalists, you see. Greece, you remember that. 1947, 1949, U.S. operations ensured a victory for the far right in national so-called elections. This is when Greece was trying to go communist. Oh, no, you're not. Germany in 1948. Military was deployed in response to the Berlin blockade. The Berlin airlift lasted 444 days. Philippines again, 1948 to 1954. The CIA directed a civil war against the Filipino HUK, H-U-K, revolt. Puerto Rico again, 1950. The military helped crush an independence rebellion in Ponce. We've been there, haven't we, Kathy? Korean War, 1951 to 1953. Actually, that was still going on. Iran, in 1953. That's when the CIA orchestrated the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh and restored the Shah to power. Vietnam, 1954 until, well, 1954, the United States offered weapons to the French in the battle against Ho Chi Minh and the Viet Minh. Guatemala again, 1954, the CIA overthrew the government of Jacobo Arbenz and placed a Colonel Armas in power. Egypt, 1956, we sent troops, the Marines actually, after Nasser nationalized the Suez Canal. Lebanon in 58. Panama in 58, after we sent troops after the Panamanians threatened the canal zone. Something about it was theirs, or it was in their country, or some such horse crap, you know. The canal zone's in their country. Please. Vietnam from the 50s to 1975. Cuba, 1961, the CIA directed the Bay of Pigs invasion. Cuba, 62. Navy, quarantine of Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Laos, 62. Our military occupied Laos during its civil war against the Pathet Lao guerrillas. Panama again, 1964. Indonesia, 1965. That's when the CIA orchestrated a military coup and the slaughter in that nation began. Dominican Republic again, in 65 and 66. Troops deployed during a national election. Guatemala again, 66 and 67. Cambodia, 1969 to 1975. Military sit-in after the Vietnam War expanded into Cambodia. Something to do with Dick Nixon. Oman, in 1970, the Marines landed to direct a possible invasion of Iran. Yep. Laos, 71 to 75, Americans carpet bomb the countryside during Laos Civil War. Chile, 1973, the CIA and Henry Kissinger orchestrated a coup killing President Allende, who had been elected, and the CIA established a military regime under General Pinochet, or Pinochet, as you will, who then kept his country in a fascist grip of terror until the people finally get rid of him. Cambodia, 1975. Angola, 1976 to 1992. The CIA-backed South African rebels fighting against Marxist Angola. Iran, again, Americans, a rescue attempt to liberate 52 hostages. 8 Americans were killed. Libya, in 1981. Americans shoot down 2 Libyan fighters. El Salvador, 11 years, from 1981 to 1992, the CIA troops and advisors aid in El Salvador's war against the FMLN, the National Liberation Front, who were seeking to, you know, own their own country. Oh, what a crazy idea that was, right? Nicaragua, of course, the CIA and National Security Council directed the Contra War against the Sandinistas in 1981 to 1990 until the Sandinistas won. Lebanon again, Marines occupied Beirut during Lebanon's civil war. And a couple of days after the order came down that the U.S. Marines should not have loaded weapons, 241 U.S. Marines were killed in the American barracks. And Reagan redeployed the troops out of there. Honduras, 1983 to 1989. Troops, blah, blah, blah. Grenada, da-da, 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 da-da. American invasion overthrew the government of Maurice Bishop. This was right after 241 Marines were killed in their barracks. And Reagan needed something to divert everyone's attention. So, Grenada! You say Grenada, I say Granada. Iran, 1984, American fighters shoot down 2 Iranian planes over the Persian Gulf. Libya, 1986, blah, blah, blah. Bolivia, 1986. Iran, 87 and 88, the United States intervened on the side of Iraq during the Iran-Iraq War. Go figure. Libya, 1989, more Navy shoot-downs of Libyan aircraft. Virgin Islands, troops landed in 1989 during unrest among Virgin Island black folk. unrest. You ever been down there? Philippines, 1989, Air Force provided air cover for government during a coup. Guess who we backed? Panama, 27,000 Americans landed in 1989 and went on to 1990, overthrowing President Manuel Noriega. 2,000 Panamanian civilians were killed. This is because Noriega was about to blow the whistle on the first George Bush about the cocaine connection. Liberia in 1990. Saudi Arabia, 1990 to 1991. American troops sent to Saudi Arabia, which was a staging area for the first war against Iraq. Kuwait in 1991, same thing. Somalia, blah, blah, blah. Bosnia in 1993 and 1995. Air Force jets bombed no-fly zone during the civil war and massacres in Yugoslavia. Haiti again, 1994, 1996. Zaire, Marines sent into Rwanda, Hutus refugee camps in the area where the Congo Revolution began. Albania, 1997. Sudan, 1998. Afghanistan, 1998. The first time, missiles launched toward alleged Afghan terrorist training camps used by Islamic fundamentalists. Iraq. Well, you know about that one. 1998 to 1999, missiles launched into Baghdad and other large Iraq cities for 4 days. This was before our invasion, the second time, of course. American jets enforced the no-fly zone that resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, blah, blah, blah. Yugoslavia, 1999. Colombia, late 1900s, all the way to the 2000s. Afghanistan, 2001. Pakistan, 2001, American advisors and forces searched for Al-Qaeda terrorists. Georgia, the country. American trainers and contractors were sent to Georgia near Chechnya, where Islamic separatists were fighting Russian rule. Yemen, 2001. Indonesia, 2001. The Philippines again, 2002. To fight the Abu Sayyaf Muslims. A radical group. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, these instances of American military invention did not include times when the United States deployed military police overseas or mobilized the National Guard or sent Navy ships off the coast to numerous countries as a show of strength or carried out covert actions where American forces were not under the direct rule of an American command. The thing is, you have to understand, truth seekers, that we are at war. We have been at war since we started slaughtering indigenous people here. It just simply has never stopped. Again, that this hour has been sponsored by a new book called Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, The Secrets They Won't Tell You About Your Digital Life. It was written by Jason Ben-Levy, who is a regular listener to this program. Thanks, Jason. Now, the book tells the inside story of venture capitalists, media moguls, and marketeers using digital magic to distract us, invade our privacy, obviously corrupt democracy, obviously distort human values, and attempt and sometimes succeed, more often than not, to sell us things we don't need. This book was awarded 5 stars from the San Francisco Book Review. Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech is available at Amazon or from your local bookstore. And to find out more, go to the website, TooMuchMagic.com, TooMuchMagic.com. And this is a way to fight the new digital 1%, sons of bitches. That's TooMuchMagic.com. Get it. Read it. And thank you, Jason, for the sponsorship very much. Good luck with the book, pal. One of the reasons for bringing this up, as you know, Monday is Memorial Day. What? Monday is Memorial Day. Did you say Memorial Day? Yeah, well. Do you know the origin of Memorial Day? Anyway, Jet Fixer writes, May is the official month of remembrance when it comes to our war dead, ending as it does on the long Memorial Day weekend when Americans typically take to the road and kill themselves and each other in far greater numbers than will die in Afghanistan. It's a weekend for which the police tend to predict rising fatalities and news reports tend to celebrate any declines in deaths on our roads and highways. If you ask Americans, a surprising number undoubtedly won't have thought about the memorial in Memorial Day at all, especially now that it's largely a marker of the start of summer and a reason to go have, a cookout. So, do you... I gave you too much time. You probably Wikipedia'd it. But Memorial Day, of course, started as Decoration Day. And when I was a kid, but honoring Civil War Day, actually. When I was a kid, they used to sell, I guess they were little fake wire poppies or carnations on the street corners for the veterans of foreign wars. And when I was a kid growing up, it was... It was called Decoration Day even back then, and my mother told me it was for the World War One, in memory of World War One. You know, the war to end all wars, the war that killed 8 million people because Archduke Ferdinand and his consort were shot, so 8 million more people had to die. Whew! Wow, son of a bitch. Not that many people died when Christ was executed, right? 8 million because of Ferdinand. Anyway, yeah, it was a civil war. Any of you people old enough to remember those little poppies that they used to sell? Little red flowers. They weren't real flowers. They were made out of tissue paper, and it had a green wire stem and a little white... tag attached to it. I forget what the tag said. It was a Flanders poppy. I hated those things once my mother told me what they were about. Dead people. War. War. Oh, yeah. How much does Washington spend on so-called defense? I got this from Institute for Public Accuracy. Two people, Chris Hellman and Mattia Kramer, just wrote a report, War Pay, the nearly $1 trillion security budget, which tallies the military budget, showing it to be much higher than it's often stated to us dumbasses out here. The piece they wrote states, quote, in fact, with projected cuts added in, the national security budget in fiscal 2013 will be $1 trillion, a staggering enough sum that it's worth taking a walk through the maze of the national security budget to see just where and, you know, that money's lodged. Now, the Pentagon's base budget doesn't include war funding, which in recent years has been well over $100 billion. You know, every time Bush... both Bushes asked for emergency war funding. We got to have money! Don't abandon the troops! Don't abandon the troops! Remember? Now, with troops withdrawn from Iraq and troop levels falling in Afghanistan, you might think that war funding would be plummeting as well. Wrong! War funding will be $88 billion in fiscal 2013. $88 billion. Now, by way of comparison, the federal government will spend around $64 billion on education that same year. You tell me, truth seeker, does that make sense to you? I know the right-wing bobbleheads, they don't give a goddamn. They don't care about any of this. They don't even know about it. They don't want to know about it. They're dumbasses from top to bottom. But you are not that way, are you, truth seeker? So, $88 billion in 2013 for war, that is unless, you know, if we start to feel froggy about Iran and decide to jump, or if our next real adversary, Pakistan, unleashes hellfire on India, game over. $64 billion on education, $88 billion on death. Well, you're not surprised by that, are you? All right, big break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Paul Karsh. Paul writes, "Let's stand with the ordinary people of Wisconsin who are fighting the bait and switch Coke sucker, Scott Walker. They understand what is at stake, and they are staging a focused counterattack in the class war. Their fight is our fight. They were the first American occupiers. For weeks, people young and old of all walks of life and all races occupied the streets of Madison in the rain and snow. Now they face a horse manure hurricane as Scott Walker fights for his political life with millions of dollars of deceptive political ads, thanks to his billionaire buddies. The ordinary people of Wisconsin are countering airwave power with people power as best as they can. They've been fighting our fight with courage and grim determination for over a year. We must all support them any way we can." Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul. I was going to say something about the station there. What was it, 91, the mic? 92.1 that slammed our program into the wee hours of the morning. Just a little bit too radical for 92.1, the mic. Well, not for them, but for their new managers, I guess. I remember they invited me out there one time. I went and met with a lot of people, had a great time. Things do change, don't they, huh? From San, Mike, thanks for reading off the history of U.S. invasion and our ever-expanding empire. People are ignorant of these facts. One thing that us anti-war, anti-drone people are noticing is that now that we are using some very graphic images of drone-bombed kids, mostly from Pakistan, we are getting a reaction. In the Chicago March, we had several huge photos, like I described, and many outraged folks asked to help us carry them. As we do every year, our anti-war group obtained a permit to be able to walk 12 feet behind the Memorial Day parade this year. The parade ahead of us only mourns the American deaths, but we mourn all deaths. We will roll our drone replica with an American flag on it and have the posters of the dead kids from the Middle East. I am making a small casket to put on a wagon, and we will have a Pakistani flag draped over it. Whoever pulls the wagon will wear a bloody shroud. I bought a piece of poster board today to make a new sign. I'm thinking maybe, Americans are not the only ones who are dying. Can you think of something to put on the other side? Sand. P.S. One cannot be anti-war and pro-Obama. Something on the other side of the sign. Guess what? A recent decision by the Marine Corps to reinstate the word Crusaders as the name of its Fighter Attack Squadron 122. They're currently called Werewolves. And adopting the Red Cross of the medieval Knights Templar. You know, the one with the little round circles on the end of each of the points, right? That cross. This was blasted as unconstitutional and willfully ignorant by Mikey Weinstein, founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Weinstein said, I don't know that the Marine Corps could do anything more to fuel the cause of jihad. It will directly end up taking lives and maiming members of our military. excuse me. You can see this. This is at MSNBC.com. You can, there it is. There's the picture from medieval times. The Knights Templar, who were slaughterers. I mean, they weren't heroes. I realize Hollywood has tried to make them into noble knights. They weren't. They were killers, murderers. They slaughtered people thought to be witches. They slaughtered Jews. They slaughtered Muslims. They slaughtered apostate Catholics. They slaughtered anyone that they could get their hands on who did not swear just total allegiance to this beast that had arisen in Rome. Anyway, Fighter Attack Squadron 122 is based out of Beaufort, South Carolina. And it used the Crusader symbol from 1958 to 2008 when Colonel William Liebline pointed out that imagery invoking the Christian conquest, the Crusades, and the colonization of Muslims during the Middle Ages was counterproductive to U.S. soldiers based across the Arab and Islamic world. As reported in the Beaufort Gazette at the time, quote, the notion of being a crusader in that part of the world doesn't float. And he ordered the change from crusader to werewolves. Well, that's certainly an improvement, right? Oh, yeah, okay. Now, according to Mikey Weinstein, dozens of military members, including Marines, in this squadron have contacted Military Religious Freedom Foundation, reporting that the name has been changed back and that the symbols had been already been painted on the vertical stabilizers of the F-18s. Weinstein says that members of the military who contacted his group, mostly moderate Protestants and Catholics, felt that the decision was blatantly religious. Weinstein said, they're being told, the enemy gets to have Allah in their fight. We get our Lord and Savior back in our fight. This is so goddamn sick. I mean, this is so filthy sick. Lieutenant Commander Wade Weigel, who currently heads the squadron, said he did not think the historic nickname was problematic. According to a report in the Beaufort Gazette on Monday, he said, quote, "It's a way for our Marines to draw on the service of the Marines before them and to make their own history under the same name. As the squadron prepared to celebrate its 70th anniversary, my intent was to return the squadron to the Crusader name since 50 of the squadron's 70 years were under that name. The name change is a reflection of our heritage." End quote. Yeah, that's like, you know, I live here in the South. I know that word heritage. That word has been so screwed by the knuckleheads and the knuckle draggers down here. The South will rise again. You know, they keep telling us to take our rebel flag down. I'll be goddamned. I won't do it. I ain't going to do it. We got heritage down here. Who's telling us to do it? The niggers? I'll bet they are, aren't they, huh? And them goddamn Jew liberals from New York, right? That's just a normal street corner conversation here in the South. So, Lieutenant Commander Wade Weigel apparently is going to need a directive from his commander-in-chief. Now, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be fun? See, this is a setup. If Obama has the sense Allah gave a sack of doorknobs, Obama will stay the hell out of this one. Don't be calling this freak up and saying, you know, the boys in your squadron, if I had sons, would look a lot like my sons. Stay out of it, Mr. Obama. This is a setup. All you have to do is call this freak son of a bitch and say to him, listen, Lieutenant Commander, switch it back. This is ridiculous. You're going to put all kinds of our people in jeopardy. Do you know what Lieutenant Commander Weigel will do first thing? Call Fox News.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? You can take your revenge, but you'll still feel bad. There must be more to life than lucky strikes in some unlucky ones.
Past the hour. So Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, a nonprofit organization, obviously, that advocates church-state separation, especially when you're out killing people, especially when you're out, a good chance of you're being grievously wounded or killed yourself. You know, I mean, kill a fill-in-the-blank for God is kind of, you know, I mean, that's so Middle Ages, isn't it? Well, that's what this is about. The, excuse me, the Fighter Attack Squadron 122 has replaced the name of their squadron, Werewolves, with the original name, Crusaders, evoking the memory of the medieval Knights Templar. So anyway, the squadron commander, Lieutenant Commander Wade Weigel, or Weigel, said he doesn't think that they're going to do anything about changing it. So through the law firm Jones Day, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation yesterday sent a letter calling on top Navy and Marine Corps brass to reverse the decision, arguing that the use of crusaders and the accompanying symbolism both violate the Constitution's separation of church and state, and threatening legal action if it's not changed. Now, this change back to crusader, you know, timing is everything. We are very naive people here. We don't understand how we're being propagandized every single day. We don't understand how we are set up and then smashed, set up and then smashed, set up and then smashed. We are being manipulated by people that would make the Nazi spin doctors green with envy. We really are. But this name change comes just as media across the planet are focusing on the trial of Anders Breivik, the Norwegian who admitted killing 77 young people in a holy crusade against Islam. And Breivik brandished the Knights Templar symbol in his manifesto and YouTube video posted shortly before his rampage. Now, remember, this murderous son of a bitch, I'm against the death penalty, but I think he should be decapitated. I really do. He should be taken to the city square and in Oslo and just lop his goddamn head off. I'm serious. I really am. You know, he went out and killed defenseless teenagers. He just drove up with all this weaponry on his boat and went ashore and started killing people left and right, kids. So, as Mikey Weinstein points out, he doesn't mention this, but I'll mention it. You know, the timing of all this is key to what's going on. It always is. But again, I hope that Mr. Obama says not a word. I don't care how much pressure is put on him now by phony liberals or anti-war people or what have you. Leave him out of it. Go for the Marine Corps commandant. Go for the Navy. Go for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. But leave Obama. I don't think Obama is so naive about this kind of stuff now that he would order this changed. But use your imagination, truth seeker. You can imagine, can't you, what would happen? Now, speaking of the first thing this lieutenant commander would do, put on his dress whites, and he would head for the nearest studio of Fox and start blubbering into Sean Hannity's breast or one of these freaks. Probably O'Reilly. And this on the same day that another study has concluded that people who only watch Fox News are less informed than all other news consumers. They're at the very bottom of the heap where they can smell the rest of our feet. Millions of people. Now, Fox Channel, the Murdoch Terror broadcast organization, commands 10 times the audience of CNN. CNN is about dead. Two or three times as much as MSNBC. Now, Fox, of course, is still dwarfed by the networks, but during the day on cable, you know, Fox is without a doubt the leader, which gives you all the proof you need that this country is going just right down the nearest public urinal. A little bit more on this new Fox study when we come back.
But they chained my mind to an endless tomb. They took my only son from me. I know it's true. Oh, so true. 'Cause I saw it on TV. I know it's true.
Thank you. monkeys on the air. Flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. More Mike Malloy. This hour being sponsored by Paul Karsh. And Paul has a message. Let's stand with the ordinary people of Wisconsin fighting the bait and switch. Coke sucker Scott Walker. They understand what's at stake, and they are staging a focused counterattack in this class war. Their fight is our fight. They were the first American occupiers, by the way. For weeks, people, young and old, of all walks of life and races, occupied the streets of Madison in the rain and the snow. Now they face a horse manure hurricane as Scott Walker fights for his political life with millions of bucks of deceptive political ads, thanks to his billionaire buddies. The ordinary people of Wisconsin are countering airwave power with people power as best as they can. They've been fighting our fight with courage and grim determination for over a year. We must all support them any way we can. Very true, and thank you, Paul. I don't want to put you to sleep, but it's very disturbing to me to learn that, you know, on any given day, Fox, Murdoch's terror broadcast organization, has 3-4 million. I realize it's only 1% of the population, but that many people. Researchers at Fairleigh Dickinson University updated a study that they had conducted late last year. That study only sampled respondents from New Jersey, where the university is located. This time, the researchers conducted a nationwide poll. Now, the poll asked questions about international news, you know, Iran, Egypt, Syria, the economic situation in Greece. All this stuff was included. And they also asked questions about domestic affairs, like Republican primaries, Congress, unemployment, the Keystone XL pipeline, you know, the stuff that's out there. The pollsters found that people who were usually able to answer, let me rephrase that. The pollsters found that people were usually able to answer 1.8, these are statistical profiles here, 1.8 out of 4 questions on foreign news, 1.6 of 5 questions on domestic news, and that people who don't watch any news were able to get 1.2 of the questions on domestic policy right. As the study explained, though, people who watched only Fox fared much worse. The study says, quote, the largest effect is that of Fox News. All else being equal, someone who watched only Fox News would be expected to answer just 1.04 domestic questions correctly, a figure which is significantly worse than if they had reported watching no media at all. On the other hand, if they listened only to NPR, they would be expected to answer 1.51 questions correctly. Viewers of Sunday morning talk shows fare similarly, and people watching only The Daily Show with Jon Stewart could answer about 1.42 questions correctly. That's taken from the study. Now, as MSNBC, I think it was MSNBC reported this, other networks also did badly in some sections. MSNBC viewers and Fox News viewers both fared worse in answering international questions than people who watched no news. People who did the best in the study were people who only listened to NPR or watched the Sunday morning talk shows or just Jon Stewart's Daily Show. Now, the study was released, I think, Wednesday. And today, Rupert's terror broadcast organization struck back. A spokes geek for the network told The Hollywood Reporter, of all newspapers, considering Farley Dickinson's undergraduate school is ranked as one of the worst in the country, we suggest the school invest in improving its weak academic program. Instead of spending money on frivolous polling, their student body does not deserve to be so ill-informed. Yeah, okay. The best defense and all that. What was that book, Kathy, written by the guy who only ate McDonald's? And he wound up, Supersize Me. And he wound up just sick. Just totally, he was warned. He was warned that if he didn't stop eating only McDonald's fare, he was going to die. He was going to die of either a heart attack or a massive stroke or diabetes. It was horrible. The same thing applies on a level, not a physical level, I wouldn't imagine, but on a level of mental acuity, on knowledge, logic, the ability to sort through propaganda garbage and find little kernels of truth, the same way these Fox viewers have to sort through all the pig droppings that their people put out there to find little nuggets of news. It's the same effect. An exclusive diet of McDonald's will kill you. An exclusive diet of Fox will kill you. There's no difference. No difference whatsoever. But I've never been able to understand that. And the complete destruction of language on that network from the very from its slogan, we report, you decide. Or the other one, fair and balanced. Oh, well. He's not my problem. Earlier this week, we told you about the U.S. military killing people in Honduras again and again and again and again. Dana Frank is a professor of history, University of California, Santa Cruz. She's the author of several books, including Bananeras, Women Transforming the Banana Unions of Latin America. Now, that book examines the banana workers' unions of Honduras. And she has a cover article in The Nation this week. And a couple of sentences from it. She writes, in the early hours of the morning of May 11, a group of indigenous people traveling by canoe on a river in the northeast Mosquitia region of Honduras came under helicopter fire. When the shooting was over, at least four persons lay dead, including two pregnant women. In Honduras, such grisly violence is no longer out of the ordinary. But what this incident threw into stark relief was the powerful role the United States is playing in this Honduran war. Now, let me digress from what Dana wrote, because you're about to hear the same tired meme. It's a drug war. Is it not true that the largest consumers of illicit drugs in the Western Hemisphere are right here in this country? And then we go to other countries and allegedly to murder people in the name of the drug war. You don't believe that, do you, truth seeker? You don't. The dictatorial or right-wing or neo-fascist regimes that run these countries and make lots of money from the drug trade tell the United States military, look, come on down here and kill some people, and we'll do it under the aegis of a drug war. You'll be protected. You're fighting dirty, rotten, mean old evil drugs. So don't worry about it. Dana goes on, U.S. officials maintain that the Drug Enforcement Administration commandos on board the helicopters did not fire their weapons that morning. Really? So it was just magic. Honduran policemen pulled the triggers. That's what the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration insists. But no one disputes that U.S. forces were heavily involved in the raid and that the helicopters are owned by the U.S. State Department. Hillary Clinton's fiefdom. Dana goes on, the United States has, in fact, been quietly escalating its military presence in Honduras, pouring police and military funding into the regime of President Porfirio Porfirio Lobo in the name of fighting drugs. The DEA is using counterinsurgency methods developed in Iraq against drug traffickers in Honduras, deploying squads of commandos with U.S. military special forces backgrounds to work closely with the Honduran police and military. The U.S. ambassador to Honduras, Lisa Kubisky, recently said, quote, "We have an opportunity now because the military is no longer at war in Iraq. Using the military funding that won't be spent, we should be able to have resources to be able to work here." To work here. You can find this article at thenation.com. We'll be right back.
The world, then you're just not paying attention. And you can turn off the TV and go about your day, but just 'cause you don't see it, it don't mean it's good.
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Paul Karsh, and he wants us to remember the people who are in Wisconsin fighting the bait and switch criminal activity of this freak Scott Walker, the governor. As Paul points out, the people of Wisconsin understand what's at stake, and they're staging a focused counterattack in this class war. Their fight is our fight. They were the first American occupiers. For weeks, people young and old of all walks of life and all races occupied the streets of Madison in the rain and the snow, and now they face a horse manure hurricane as Scott Walker fights for his life with millions of dollars of deceptive political ads thanks to his billionaire buddies. The ordinary people of Wisconsin are countering airwave power with people power as best they can. They've been fighting our fight with courage and grim determination for over a year. We've got to support them any way we can. It's very true. Thanks, Paul, for the reminder and also for the sponsorship. So anyway, I wanted to bring up the stuff about Central America because here we go again. You know, here we go again. This has been going on for over a century. Here we go again. This time it's Honduras. And I would imagine that the owners of the United States military, corporate America, are starting to get a little bit pissed off. That's why they're now ordering the executions of pregnant women. They're getting pissed off. This has been going on for over 100 years. And all corporate America is trying to do is to prevent any kind of social justice in that country, especially where it concerns the fruit plantations, especially the banana plantations. You wouldn't think bananas would be worth that much, would you? Where you can just go butcher pregnant women over a bunch of goddamn bananas, right? But it is important. You see, this is what corporate America says. Don't ever give an inch. When these son of a bitches start whining about the 0.1% or the 1%, bring out the goddamn water cannons. Don't give an inch. When they start talking about we 1% are supposed to pay our fair share, says goddamn who? Who came up with that? Honest John the Commie? Pay our fair share? So, as Memorial Day approaches, And we're going to have, aside from the slaughter that we are going to continue now in Central America, we will probably have a few American contractors or CIA people or State Department commandos coming home in boxes. And, of course, everybody will be told it's, you know, once again, that dirty old war on drugs. It's that dirty old war on drugs. God damn it. You know, Obama is about to open up the Alaskan oceans to Shell oil. I think Shell is to begin drilling in July. And, you know, Obama, there's no surprise here. Big piece in the New York Times today about this, about the Inuit people there and their protests. Okay. We're going to listen to a bunch of Eskimos, right? Just like we did the Lakotas or anybody else. Oh, get real. God damn. Them and their goddamn whales. Yeah, who cares about the whales? We want the oil. So Obama is going to sign off on this, and if he hasn't already. And if the protests get too big, Obama should tear a page out of Hillary Clinton's notebook here, which is the same as Henry Kissinger's notebook, which was the same as any murderous Secretary of State or a foreign policy advisor over U.S. history for the past century, and just tell the American people, Mr. President, that there's a war on drugs. Those Inuit people are there. I swear to you, it's opium poppies coming out of Afghanistan. They're going over the mountains into Siberia, into Russia, and then they're coming across the Kamchatka Peninsula, and they're taking them boats over to the Aleutian Islands, and then down the Aleutian Island chain. And the next thing you know, they're poisoning our young people in Chicago and Atlanta and Detroit. So we have to stop this. We have to stop this. So we are going to send troops to the Chukchi Sea and the Beaufort Sea. I'm probably mispronouncing both of them, but I don't care. You know, the water, the icy, cold, pristine waters near the North Pole, the Arctic Sea, because, you know, there's oil down there. And as Obama points out, the horror that happened in the Gulf of Mexico, well, my God, they were drilling 5,000 feet down. These seas in the Alaska oceans, they're only going to be going down 150, 200 feet. Ain't no big thing. The U.S. Coast Guard, of course, is totally unprepared to handle any kind of a blowout, an explosion, just leakage. I guess Mr. Obama wants everybody to believe that not a single drop of oil, not a cup, not a gallon, not a barrel will leak out of these drills, out of these wells. Nothing will be slopped overboard from the drilling platforms. Everything is fine. Big picture in the New York Times this morning, these two huge drilling rigs that are being prepared in Seattle, getting ready to start. It'll be in July. It's going to happen. And so the next time somebody tells you that President Obama is the environment president, mention this stuff. Just for the hell of it. Of course, on the other hand, you know, gosh, we better reelect Obama because who wants a President Romney, right? Oh, man, we don't want that. Oh, God, no. is 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Bill in Paso Robles, California. Thanks, Bill. And Bill writes, watching the young Iraq and Afghanistan vets hurl their empty war medals back at the lying generals and other warmongering NATO psychopaths in Chicago touched my heart, took me back to the 60s, and gave me a bittersweet glimmer, a wistful vision that the youth of this country are our only hope. May the force of youth and nature be with you, brave kids. Bill in Paso Robles, California. Thanks, Bill. I share the sentiment. Oh, bitter bink, bitter boom. We have opened up the phone lines if you want to call in. We will take your phone call. To show you how important to corporate America unending war really is, the House Republican leaders have blocked an amendment that would solidify the Afghanistan withdrawal timeline. This is reported at Truth Out yesterday, I think. Obama describing his Afghan war policy, according to Bob Woodward's 2010 book. Obama said, quote, I can't let this be a war without end, and I can't lose the whole Democratic Party. But, according to Truth Out, until this moment, the administration is still letting it be a war without end. And the Afghan war policy has lost not only the whole Democratic Party, but a substantial part of the Republican Party as well. A majority of Republican voters, for example. One thing the Afghan war policy hasn't lost, though, is the Republican leadership. And this was demonstrated last night when the Republican leadership blocked consideration in the House of a bipartisan amendment offered by Jim McGovern, Democrat of Massachusetts, and Walter Jones, Republican of North Carolina, that would have nailed to the wall the current slippery timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. This is how CNN put it. House Republicans pulled the plug on a vote Thursday on a bipartisan amendment to a defense bill that would have forced the Obama administration to stick firmly to its timetable for getting U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. Republicans were concerned the amendment could pass, according to two Republican congressional sources. Do you understand that? The reason the amendment couldn't be allowed to come for a vote was because it would pass. Do you understand that? An old anarchist saying goes like this, quote, if voting changed anything, they'd abolish it, end quote. But as Robert Naiman at Truth Out reports, this certainly is not the democracy they told us about when we were little kids. Do you remember anything about a measure with majority support being throttled by the House leadership ever? No. But wait, Naiman points out, it's not that simple. According to CNN, one of the Republican sources stressed that there were a combination of factors for not allowing a vote on the timetable proposal, including a lack of White House engagement. Republican leaders expected a block of their own members to support the measure, but they couldn't rely on the White House to lobby Democrats against it. So, as Naiman points out, now we have a more nuanced view. It's not that the Republican leadership was against voting on the amendment per se. It's that they couldn't trust the White House to break enough Democratic arms to oppose it because the Republican leadership couldn't stop enough House Republicans from defecting. It all makes sense if you start from the premise that the majority of the House, like the majority of the American people, can't be allowed to have any say. if they insist on disagreeing with the policy that has already been determined by others. But that's not the end of the story. CNN again, quote, a frustrated Representative Jones said he would try again to attach the language to the defense spending bill when it comes up. He said, quote, this is supposed to be the people's house. That means we listen to the people. How about listening to the 72% of those who say get out of Afghanistan, end quote. And as Damon says, we now know that the Achilles heel of the current policy, what it is, until now, this administration has gotten away with having a two-faced policy, presenting to the American people as a timetable for withdrawal, but understood by the Pentagon and the Republican leadership as allowing tens of thousands of U.S. troops to remain in Afghanistan forever. And now we know how to kill the Pentagon's fantasy of keeping tens of thousands of U.S. troops in Afghanistan forever. How do you do that? Nail the administration's pseudo-timetable for withdrawal to the wall. That's all we have to do. You cannot be anti-war and pro-Obama. You can't. You can try. If you are a good contortionist, and again, keep in mind, I'm not busting President Obama for his policy. If this is what he thinks comprises leadership, you know, the double talk and the deception and the slipperiness. I mean, President Obama is starting to remind me of an educated George W. Bush. So the effort here by a Democrat and Republican in the House, of all places, was to solidify this withdrawal timetable of 2014. And you would think that the President of the United States would have jumped on that like a duck on a June bug. Are you kidding me? For once, something bipartisan. But the silence from the White House was deafening. Obama does not want a full withdrawal from Afghanistan, for whatever his reasons are. And if he has reasons that are valid, present them to the American public. But he doesn't dare, because the American public is massively against any further involvement after 10 years in Afghanistan. Even the Russians weren't in there that long. Alexander the Great wasn't there that long. The Brits weren't there that long. Genghis Khan wasn't there that long, I don't think. I don't know, maybe they were. I really don't care. But we've been there for a decade, and what have we accomplished? What have we accomplished? So the fact that there was no support from the Obama administration, not from Hillary Clinton, not from Mr. Obama, not from Joe Biden, nobody. Nobody. So the amendment was withdrawn. You cannot be anti-war and pro-Obama. You cannot be. If you have other reasons to vote for Obama, go right ahead. But Jesus Christ, self-delusion, this is what happens if you watch Fox. This is what Republicans do. If you are a liberal or a progressive or a Democrat, why are you doing it? Maybe you're not. Maybe your eyes are wide shut or wide open or something. Maybe you understand that this president is a pro-war president. He is a president that says, okay, let's start sinking the drill bits into the Arctic Ocean. Maybe you understand that, but you have some other reason that you've decided that you are going to vote for him again. Okay, but don't insult yourself and your liberal friends by acting as though this president wants to get us out of Afghanistan or any place. This president is expanding where U.S. troops are. Come on, people.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Let's go to your phone calls. Alan is in Philadelphia. Hello, Alan. Alan?
Good evening, Mike.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Good. I'd like to present a point to the truth seekers, which pertains more to a church night, but you didn't open the phones last night.
Uh-huh.
It involves this, I guess, a subset of the Catholic Church called the Legionnaires for Christ.
Right.
Which is under a defensive position now because it's found out that that their founder was an adulterer, fathering multiple children, and also he was a sexual assaulter. But the point I wanted to bring out tonight was that the superior from Rome emailed out to a worldwide email apologizing for the actions of his main representative in America who fathered a child.
Mm-hmm.
This main representative in America was preaching about morality publicly and also preaching morality to seminarians.
Right.
This also, with this man in America, his only apology was that, quote, he was sorry that he didn't keep a low profile as the superior in Rome suggested from 2006. The point I want to make, Mike, to the truth seekers is, this is the first direct link, and if I'm wrong, correct me, that we have of a specifically a cover-up emanating from the Vatican. Am I correct in this?
Oh, of course you are. You're talking about Reverend Thomas Williams, by the way, for people who want to know his name. As you laid out, as you said, he, first of all, the Legion of Christ religious order is, you know, the founder was a pedophile. The founder, was having sex with just about anyone he could get his hands on. The founder had no problem in fathering children. The founder had no, problem. What was his name? Reverend Marcial Maciel. He fathered three children with two women, sexually abused his seminarians. He died in 2008. In 2009, the Legion of Christ admitted to his crimes. So this guy you're talking about, the Reverend Thomas Williams, what he's accused of doing and has admitted doing is minor. But you are right, compared to this Reverend Maciel, or however you pronounce his last name, his crimes were minor compared to the guy who founded the order. But you are correct; it is a cover up. But I'm not trying to be a smartass here. But you're not surprised, are you? The Catholic Church covering something up? I mean, that has been their MO for 1800 years.
I agree with you, but is this the first publicly where we can actually see a direct link?
I think so.
A Vatican superior giving orders of a cover up.
I would call it that. Yes.
So I thought that was the pertinent point I'd like to bring out to the truth seekers.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about Williams, he was the author. There was a book he came out with a few years ago called, I think it was Knowing Right from Wrong. A Christian Guide to Conscience. And while at the same time, this is like Newt Gingrich. When Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House and doing everything in his power to impeach Bill Clinton for essentially, lying or committing, it fell into a perjury trap. It depends on your definition of sexual relations. But while he was doing that, while Newt was doing that, as you know, he was boinking somebody who became his third wife eventually. But that was the woman that he was having sex with, the good Catholic girl, who was committing just open adultery and knowing that the guy she was sleeping with was accusing some other man of doing exactly the same thing. So, I mean, Callista, whatever the hell her last name is Gingrich now, but Callista Gingrich defines Catholic hypocrisy to me. Just absolutely defines it on that level of a commoner. The people you were mentioning, yeah, the damage that they did, the cover-ups that were perpetrated. I mean, it should once again display the utter and absolute hypocrisy, criminal activity of the Catholic Church. I mean, they're neck deep in it. This is what they do. You know, they lie, they deceive, they destroy, they corrupt. I would think if the facade of this religious nonsense could be peeled back from the Catholic Church now, 50 years ago, 1,000 years ago, I think we would see a mass of squirming maggots as to the corruption of this institution.
Well, Mike, I always thought that when they shuffled these PDO piles from parish to parish and state to state, the objective was a cover-up to maintain the viability of
right.
the corporation. Mike, let me just say, keep it lit. And Mike, don't ever let me hear that you're bogarting a big fatty.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Take care. Take care. Thanks for checking in.
Truth Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. You know, Alan was talking about if you just focus on the priest pedophile horrors and crimes of the past that have been revealed in the past 15 years. And then this guy, this Williams, this Reverend Thomas Williams, and the person who founded the Legion of Christ Religious Order, Marcial Maciel. Again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But in doing that, I think anyone can only come to one conclusion, that whereas Jesus made it very clear that children were the way I interpret the Bible anyway, his words about children. Children were, their innocence was what the kingdom of heaven was all about. His kingdom of heaven was about, you know, he said, suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. The attitude of the Catholic Church and these priests and this, the founder of the Legion, up to and including Reverend Williams, they all leave me with the impression that they just goddamn hate children. They hate them. This Father Williams would not acknowledge paternity because of his own ego. I understand he has now developed cancer. I'm not going to beat up on him so much as to just restate what I've said 1,000 times on this program, that the hierarchy of the Catholic Church hates women and obviously hates children. This is a very close club of twisted, perverted men who have arrested development to the extent that their sex lives consist of raping children. And any statement to the contrary regarding that is a statement that comes from either someone who just chooses to be blind to this. I mean, the destruction and damage done by the Catholic organization over the past 1800 years is incalculable. Nobody could add up the death and destruction and corruption and poison that this organization. And again, I'm not talking about individual priests and nuns who have done a lot to alleviate suffering. They are the exception that lays bare the rule. When you look at the church's attitude toward children, they're not held as sacred. They're not held as the future. They are held as sex objects for these goddamn monsters to sexually abuse. And then the church hierarchy, it doesn't matter if it's in Chicago or Boston or Rome or Dublin or Phnom Penh. It doesn't make any difference. The attitude then, globally, is to cover it up, to threaten the people who come forward. Now, you can interpret that or evaluate the effect of the church, the Catholic Church, any way you choose to do it. That's the way I've chosen to do it. They are an organization that is more destructive to the teachings of their own Redeemer than any atheist or agnostic or someone of a different religion that's in a blood feud with Christianity could possibly do. And they continue to do it every day. I mentioned several months ago, it seems that one of the organizing principles of the Catholic Church is pedophiles. I get very angry, as you can tell. This hour is being sponsored by Bill in Paso Robles, California, who writes, watching the young Iraq and Afghanistan vets hurl their empty war medals back at the lying generals and other warmongering NATO psychopaths gathered in Chicago touched my heart, took me back to the 60s and gave me a bittersweet glimmer, a wistful vision that the youth of this country are our only hope. May the force of youth and nature be with you, brave kids. Bill in Paso Robles, California. Kevin, excuse me, is in Colorado Springs.
Hi, good evening, Mike. I was going to talk about how our mayor is using the same old Republican playbook of raising the rates on the disabled and cutting public transportation.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just going to say this. Move on, Occupy. I've watched here in the last few weeks for little petty arguments between different progressive groups have gone on. And I just want to say to everybody, you know, right now, we are not the enemy of each other. The corporatists are our enemy. We need to put aside all the petty arguments and get out there and protest nonviolently the things that are important. We need, if we're able to show up in New York on July 4th, and we need to participate. Sitting back now is not an option if you're a progressive. And that's all I got to say.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate your comments. Sanchez is in East L.A., listening on Sirius. Hello,
ooh,
Sanchez.
Long Beach. Ooh, don't throw me back into East L.A.
Oh, you're in Long Beach now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I fought too hard to get out of East L.A., man.
right.
Let me jump the conversation back to the religion thing for a second here, because remember, it wasn't just the military that was using the word crusade.
Mm-hmm.
You'll recall that Chuckle Nuts used it on September the 11th.
Right.
As part of his speech. I forget exactly what a crusade to free the Middle East. I don't remember what he said, but he was quickly corrected at that
right,
point.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know why they would go back and use that again.
I think because these religious fanatics of the Christian type have taken over in so many military units, and what they've done, I think what they've done is inculcated this garbage into the heads of these 18 and 19 and 20 year olds. It's the old kill a gook for Christ attitude that was prevalent in Vietnam.
Right.
It's sick. And these 18 and 19 year olds who are being totally stripped of whatever psychological development they have put together in their 19 years, it's stripped out of them and replaced with a kill attitude And you have to have something to bolster the kill attitude, so do it for God.
Yeah.
Do it for Jesus. Do it because, you know, the Muslims are trying to take over the world. You know, in Hitler's time, the Jews were trying to take over the world. In our time, the Muslim. You know, I mean, come on. It's not very difficult to figure out why they link war and Christianity. Well, I mean, even the songs, Onward Christian Soldiers. Come on.
Yeah. Well, countering that news with some good news for you here, with Occupy LA, they returned from Chicago, as you were also discussing that a moment ago, from their NATO demonstration. They came back with 30 to 40 fresh new occupiers, people from Occupy New York, Occupy Chicago. So they made a call last night for people to donate blankets or tents or stuff like that. So I loaded up some stuff and dropped it off. Dropped off some boots and I'd even dropped off my tent for this one guy named Dimitri. He said, "Whoa, man, you saved my life." And I just told him, "Do good work, man." So
yeah, well, that's you know, it's like what was his name, Hugh Romney, or as we knew him, Wavy Gravy, said at Woodstock, "Oh man, come on, you know what we have in mind is breakfast for 300,000. So you know, if you're not going to eat it, turn around and feed the person next to you. We got to feed each other, man. Remember that?"
Yeah.
"We got to feed each other, man." Yeah, well, so that's exactly what you were doing.
Well, that's what well, another bit of good news is what the other end of Occupy fights foreclosures. They had a victory, another victory here. They were fighting for a widowed mother and her case. Her name is Diana Rodriguez. It's a home in the West Adams District in Los Angeles. And finally, today, I got to read this here real quick. Occupy fights foreclosures. Activists organized an audit of Ms. Rodriguez's loan and foreclosure paperwork. The audit quickly turned up some troubling results.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, not only was the sale fraudulently, but so was the foreclosure. So she got her house back and they're making rearrangements there. So that's another victory. Yet another victory.
Well, if every one of these foreclosure actions against people were examined, I think they would find that so many of them are fraudulent. So many people have been kicked out on the street. So these goddamn banksters can continue their fraud. Hey, I got to leave there, Sanchez. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Take it easy. Take it easy. We'll be right back. Been sponsored by Bill in Paso Robles, California. One more time, his message, and it's a good one. Watching the young Iraq and Afghanistan war vets hurl their empty war medals back at the lying generals and other warmongering NATO psychopaths in Chicago touched my heart, took me back to the 60s, and gave me a bittersweet glimmer, a wistful vision that the youth of this country are our only hope. May the force of youth and nature be with you, brave kids. Bill in Paso Robles, California. Well said, Bill. Thank you. Victor is driving in Georgia. Hey, Victor.
Oh, good evening.
Hi.
First time I've heard your show. I listen to the station all the time, but mostly during the day.
Ah, yeah. Well, we're on at night.
I think you're doing it great. I love the impression of the Woodstock album. I think it was 400,000, but you hit it spot on. It was good.
All right. Okay.
I went to Catholic school, Sister Mary Theodore. Talk about hypocrisy. All my knuckles are broken because in second grade, in penmanship class, if you didn't do the cursive just right, you had to put your hands on the desk and she'd take that 3/4-inch hickory stick and crack your knuckles.
Nice.
Well, I guess that helped. My penmanship's pretty good, but, you know, it's beat into me. Anyway, you got to know that, you know, Sister Mary Elephant knows damn well that Father McDouchebag is doing something in the back rectory. You know, you talked about how there's good people in the church and all that.
Right.
But they're all, it's the same thing, they're enabling. They're all keeping a blind eye. You know, when did a nun ever pull a person over and say, hey, you know, I think the Father's doing something with your son, the altar boy? They don't do it. They all protect their own.
Right.
Just like a lot of other organizations. And that was my little rant. What I'd like to say, though, is we have to educate our young. My wife just say, how can we let them get away with this? And how can we let the kids do that? I said, honey, my job, being a child of the 60s and 70s, my job is to make sure they don't do drugs. Everything else will work itself out.
That's kind of true. There's only one other thing, and that's don't let them ever vote Republican.
Well, you know, you gotta check yourself there, because, you know, I heard a couple times in your show how you say you can't be, if people just tune in for 2 minutes and they hear you say, if you're for Obama, you can't be for Obama unless you're for war and all that.
Well, that's a subtle change from what I really say. What I say is this: you can't be anti-war and pro-Obama. And I've said many times, if somebody wants to, I would love to vote for the reelection of Barack Obama. I would love to vote Democrat again, because I've been a Democrat all my life. But you have to, at some point, you either have to stop this perpetual game that is run by these two national parties, or you have to willingly participate. If you are willing to willingly participate, then my point of view is, then stop the jive talking nonsense that you are in favor of helping people. Stop the nonsense that you're anti-war. Stop the nonsense that you really do believe in freedom, because neither one of these political parties act on any of that stuff ever. And they used to, but they haven't for a long time. And I don't know that they ever have. This country has been involved in wars of stealing other people's resources for over 100 years. And every single president, every single secretary of state, every single Congress has supported that attitude. Now, if people want to justify that and say it's okay, have at it. To me, no, I'm not going there. So,
well, it's well put. If I can add one more thing. We as parents have, when I was, you know, raising my son, you know, be an army of one was the big commercial they had on back
right,
then.
Right.
And, we weren't actively in any engagements as far as we all knew. And he came home one day, and I think it was a junior year in high school, the recruiter was there on that. And his buddy Smitty was going to join the Marines because his dad was a Marine and on, they had the buddy system and all that. And
right.
Every time any commercial ever came on since he was 4 or 5 years old, I'd spend 10 minutes preaching, you don't ever want to join the military. You don't ever want to join the military.
Right.
And so when this Smitty, I took his friend over to the side and said, Smitty, you don't want to do this, because I know your dad was in it and everything, and he might get mad at me for saying this at baseball practice, whatever. But I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to wake up one day standing in a desert with a rifle in your hand guarding some oil refinery, and you're not going to like it. And he laughed at me and said, we're not at war. It's a peacetime, this and that. 6 months later, I got to see him again. He had a different look in his face. As he came back from it was Desert Storm. I think it was the first time, right? In Iraq.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he had a different look in his face as he told me and my son about how he had to drive. They were getting the hell out of there, and he was driving, and he was driving literally over dead bodies in a Jeep,
right.
Arms and legs flailing. And the kid he was a class clown. He was a great kid. Never had that look in his eye again. He looked like a deer in the headlights.
That's right. You know? That's right.
And that's the youth. The youth have to know, stop doing it. Let them pay Halliburton $250,000 a year for all their private army. But we got to tell our kids to stop signing the dotted line at high school.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely. Victor, thank you. I enjoyed your call. I hope you call again. And thanks for thanks for finding the program. All right?
Hey, keep up the good work. Every time I'm on the night shift here, I'll be listening in, buddy.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Take care, Victor. Yeah, I remember when my son Chris, remember Kathy, when he was kind of floundering for a while before he got back into school and got all degreed up, but he was talking about joining the military, and I said, talk to your uncle Ken, who was a naval officer, 2 tours in Vietnam, 2 years shore duty in Italy. Talk to Lieutenant full lieutenant, Uncle Ken. And Ken sat him down and said, Chris, don't even think about it. And Ken was an officer. He wasn't, he was Republican. Yeah, he was Republican. I think he still is. But he, you know, he sat my son down and just said, no, because you are not fighting for what you think you are. All right, I'll see you tomorrow night. If I didn't get to your phone call, I'm sorry. I apologize. There's the big hammer coming down. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Folks, Ronnie.